powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back to the Jake and Stacy Show. We are excited to bring on the Aussie, Ryan Rowan Smith, former Mariners pitcher and Root Sports analyst on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing? How you guys doing? No Stacy today.
No Stacy today. We finally got her out on vacation, Ryan. She's a workaholic, like, so she needs some time off, you know. So I'm steering the sure. ship, which it's been a little shaky, Ryan, but we're getting there.
Sounds good.
So Ryan, what do you make of last night? You know, bringing Jared Kelnick up, bringing Logan Gilbert up. What was the energy like for you heading into that day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously a ton of excitement, a lot of anticipation, just because of how much, and I've never seen this in the last, you know, 6, 12, or 24 months even. You know, just such an anticipation to see some of these, you know, double-A guys to come up to the big leagues. I mean, I've played with a lot of different prospects and guys that you're waiting to see and everything else, but nothing like this. So it was exciting. It was really, really exciting. It happened a little quicker this year coming out of spring training than I was expecting, especially for Logan Gilbert. But it was fun. And you know what? Not everyone has fairy tale debuts, but you'll never forget it. And just from what you see from, I know there was an 0-for-4 in there and a 4-inning stint from both of them, but there is a lot to be excited about, that's for sure.
I thought you made a great point on the broadcast last night when you said that, and you said that, you know, it's not a terrible thing necessarily to not have the greatest debut, because no matter what, when you come to the majors, you're going to go through a period of time where it's tough to hit or you have problems getting guys out, so why not get it out of the way in the first place? And I imagine that's something that you can learn by watching. How is it for those guys? Will it be tough for them to bounce back from something like that, or is this where baseball helps you and saves you by having a game the next day?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a pitcher standpoint, let's talk about Logan Gilbert. First of all, I think Jared Kelnick, he's, you know, got that kind of mindset where it's like, yeah, I'm just going to kill this regardless. And, you know, look, he hit some balls hard. He looked pretty dialed in. But from Logan Gilbert's standpoint, I said that last time on the broadcast, you know what, take your lumps early and just get settled. Nothing gets your heart rate down more than, you know, giving up a home run and saying, all right, well, I got nothing else to lose now I can just go pitch. Because there is so much anticipation. Nerves are through the roof. Everything else. And if you go out and absolutely dominate 6-7 innings, that's great, and it's a great way to get to the big leagues. But all of a sudden, once you get into that and it continues on, all of a sudden you hit this little bump in the road, and it's like, oh, hold on a minute, this is supposed to be easy. So I think the fact that he came up to the big leagues, gave up some hard-hit balls, he's obviously able to handle it mentally, strong enough. Obviously, he knows he's good. I'm talking about Logan Gilbert. He's going to be fine. But, you know, get a couple of those swings out of the way. And you noticed it too last night. All of a sudden, he adjusted. Less fastballs. He started throwing a couple more breaking balls. That slider all of a sudden showed up in that third inning. All of a sudden, the slider rolled in the front gate. Said, hey, guys, I'm here. And it was filthy. And I was like, oh, there it is. All right. Now we're starting to see something. We're going to start to see why this kid's so good. And now he can just go ahead and go and pitch.
You know, Ryan, I wanted to ask you in the worst way about that, because, you know, Logan Gilbert, his profile coming in was, hey, he is a heavy fastball pitcher. And you saw him yesterday, and I'm curious if you think that will maintain and he just needs to be better with his location, or if there's going to need to be a little bit of adjusting, because as you'd mentioned, I saw the same thing. He started incorporating his off-speed stuff, his slider, his curveball. It was filthy, and guys had a hard time, you know, keeping up with it. What do you think the adjustment is for him?
Well, you know, Jake, you know this from being an athlete. Do the things that got you there. There's a reason why you were having success, and you'll have the same success in the big leagues. I think, you know, in just a small sample size of just a couple of innings, he will still, that fastball percentage, regardless of showing off, and we talked about the slider and the curveball and the secondary stuff, that fastball percentage will stay there, I think. The command will be better. The one thing I will say, and this is why he can be a high-percentage fastball guy is because of his extension. Now, Scott Service and some of the Mariners people, Jerry Depoto, have talked about that, how much extension he gets down the mound. And I was watching him, and we got a chance to watch him at T-Mobile Park instead of watching that grainy footage from the minor leagues. And you really see, and just being a former pitcher, I'm like, whoa, man, he gets way down that hill. So if you think of it like this, why that's so important is you think of Randy Johnson. Now, Randy Johnson threw gas, right? Obviously, upper 90s fastball. But when he's throwing from little league distance, when it's an extra foot, a foot and a half closer to you as a hitter, man, it is tough to hit. And the margin for error just grows. In other words, you can get away with some fastballs. And then when all of a sudden you start showing off that slider and get that slider in the back of hitters' brains, man, it's going to be awfully tough to handle Logan Gilbert. Not only that, he's 6'6", 225 pounds. There's a lot coming at you. So I think his biggest weapon, when you talk about, you know, pitch arsenal and everything else, I can keep that high percentage of fastballs, but that extension he has, that natural extension he gets, that's his biggest weapon, and that's something that's going to give him success as he goes on in his major league career.
No, they lost a bunch of pitchers because of injury. Was that part of the reason why he was brought up? And I'll just ask it this way. Do you think if they had their druthers, they would have waited a little while before they brought Logan up this year?
I think so. You know, I think, you know, obviously circumstances change. I think that they were never going to budge from that six-man rotation. A lot of people, you know, when you saw these injuries, a lot of people said, well, why don't you just go to a five-man rotation? That was set in stone. And that's to set in stone, give some consistency for guys like Kikuchi, even James Paxton before he got hurt. We're going to give you guys an extra day. We're going to have a six-man rotation, Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, coming off a 60-game season. So the six-man rotation was never going to change. But when all of a sudden, you know, you lose Marco Gonzalez, Paxton, Mark Gavich's, or, you know what, circumstances change, and it just creates openings. Now, I said this too, like, it doesn't matter if you're a prospect or, you know, a suspect, like the person, like yours truly. You have to wait for injuries to get those opportunities. That's kind of how it works. And even, you know, in Logan Gilbert's case, big time prospect, we get it, he's on a timeline, but you know what, a couple injuries happen, and here he is a little earlier than what we expected.
You mentioned Jared Kelnick, and you feel like, hey, he's going to be fine. He's got the mental makeup. You go 0-for-4. Hey, he's got the mentality to make up for that. Now, I was curious to see how Zach Plesac was approaching him. You know, he's hitting at the top of the order, and that's a big spot to be in right out of the gate. What were some of the things that you saw from Plesac? And if you're a pitcher and you're at the big league level and you see this high level prospect, what are you going to challenge him with to start out?
Well, first of all, you do have to challenge him, because regardless of any sort of anecdotal scouting report you get from your buddy, oh, hey, I face this guy in Double A, it's totally different to the information you get when they're actually playing on a major league field. So I think that Zach Plesac, you know, for him facing the guy, well, first of all, he jumped on that first pitch. I love that, by the way, just coming out. Getting lost in the moment. Oh, wow, I'm in the big leagues. He's just coming out swinging. I love that. But you notice with Plesac, I think once he got to that second, third, fourth at bat, regardless of any kind of scouting report, you have to feel it out for that first time around. Because, look, I've had that before. I know this guy from such and such, and you can throw a breaking ball. I'm not trusting that. You know, that's not what I'm doing. I guarantee you Zach Plesac was the same way. The one thing, speaking of that matchup, and I know he went 0-for-4, but the one thing with Jared Kelnick, and we've heard this from, you know, teammates of his in the minor leagues and people who evaluate him, he has the ability to make hard contact on pitches that you're not supposed to make hard contact on. And even, and on top of that too, you know, Plesac's changeup was filthy last night. He threw one of them to Kelnick in a fastball count, and Kelnick saw that thing right away. And you could see it. It wasn't even a flinch. And that told me, it was like, as a pitcher, when you're throwing against that, you're like, oh man, that was basically the best weapon I had in this count. And you saw that thing out of my hands. That's an unsettling feeling, because it's like, okay, now what do I do with this? With most guys, even superstars, you can still get that little bit of a, you know, where you trick them a little bit and you see those hands start to go or something. So that was good to see. I think Jared Kelnick's going to be fine regardless of what kind of overwhelming pitcher he's facing. I just think he has that, you know, that extra level when it comes to plate discipline, contact, and all these things. And we're going to see that soon.
Do you like him batting leadoff?
I do. I was kind of, we're kind of trying to figure out where is he going to hit. You know, Mitch Haniger, as long as Mitch Haniger, who looks very comfortable in the leadoff spot, as long as he's like, yeah, all good, I can hit second, it doesn't faze me. Some guys are very particular about how they hit and what kind of rhythm they're in and who they're hitting after and everything else, especially when it's been a month into this season. But I think for Jared Kelnick, you know what, he's a dynamic player. He's got some speed. He can make a ton of contact. You know, I kind of compare him, Lenny Dykstra. You know, he has that kind of energy when he comes up to hit. So I like him in that leadoff spot, as long as the guys behind him, when it comes to Haniger and Kyle Seager, if they're all good with it, hey, keep him up in that top spot.
Ryan, yesterday the Mariners in the first inning were able to get Plesac to 25 pitches. Then you go to innings 2 through 7 through the lineup, and Plesac only had to pitch, I think it averaged out to 8.8 pitches is what it ended up being per inning through that time frame. You know, for a team that talks about controlling the zone as a hitter, as a lineup in general, how do nights like that happen? Is it just the pitcher's just so has just such dominant stuff, has such control, or is the approach just a little off?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. First of all, you know, Zach Plesac, he's been throwing the ball really, really well. Like, and he's been doing it with, you know, 2 to 3 different pitches for strikes. So all of a sudden, that obviously generates efficiency when you're 0-1. I think it was 18 for 25 last night. You know, that's gonna you know, send itself into some faster innings. But I think on the offensive side of things, it's situation. They're coming out of, you know, LA where they face tough pitching, and there's a little bit of that pressing going on where all of a sudden you start to see guys swinging and making weaker contact, because he wasn't, you know, striking, blowing doors off guys. It was weaker contact early in the count. You see the head drop and the frustration roll in. There's conversations in the dugout in between innings, the ripping the batting gloves, all these little things, that frustration that comes in. And then all of a sudden you look out, the pitcher's barely broken a sweat. So I think it's a little bit of both. And I think, you know, I'm not taking the pitcher side here, but credit to Zach Plesac, man. He had that breaking ball of his and that changeup early in counts, and it was just weak contact, one after the next.
Yeah, the Indians are just creating great pitchers over there. I mean, I think of the guys that they lost, and Kluber and Bauer, and they've still got Bieber, and they've got this kid Plesac. I mean, they have got a lot of arms over there.
Yeah, and you see that. You start to see a bit of a trend in some of these organizations. Now, obviously, their offense is, I think it's ranked like 29th when it comes to, you know, some of the numbers you see with, you know, batting average on base, all those numbers. But when it comes to pitching, and I think a lot of this comes from a situation when you have play development or philosophies. I've been in different organizations. After I left the Mariners, I was in different organizations where I'd spent time in the minor leagues. And you start to see the good and the bad of how they, you know, basically how the play development works with some of these guys. And even how they, you know, what kind of guy do they end up drafting and bringing into their system? And then how do they build them up? And, you know, what's kind of the schedule for them and everything else? And the Indians have obviously got something up their sleeve when it comes down to player development. It kind of starts, you know, high A, double A, triple A, and they come up and you have these polished pitches. And this is outside of the Carrasco and the Trevor Bauer and everyone else. You start to see these young guys come up and, man, they are polished, absolutely polished. So I think that gets down down the farm somewhere deep down there where all of a sudden that philosophy sticks, the players respect it and they follow it and they come out and there you have it.
You're listening to Ryan Roland Smith, former Mariners pitcher and Root Sports analyst on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Ryan, one last question here. Thanks for your time. But wanted to ask you, are you doing any player development stuff of your own? Are you working with some young guys out here? I thought I saw some of that. Maybe doing a camp or two along the way?
Yeah, I do actually. It's funny, during COVID last year, I was doing a lot of stuff with the Australian kids, not because I'm biased, but you have to have an Aussie accent to do some work, but I was working hard getting Australian kids into you know, college scholarships and into good schools over here, because that's something I never had a chance to do. And then during COVID, I started, because we didn't have the season, I started working with a lot more kids here in Seattle. It was great. And from one, as you know, Jake, one thing leads to another, and I'm working with all kinds of kids. And I do have a camp coming up. We have two of them, one in Bellevue in July and then one in Green Lake, actually, my backyard, in August with some of the younger kids, 6 to 12. everyone's welcome, and it's a lot of fun, man. I love working with kids, all ages, and just trying to give them everything I got from all the good and bad I had as a kid.
Well, that's awesome. It's the best, being able to give back. Know that from firsthand experience. And if there's any aspiring pitchers out there that are wanting to come out, and baseball fans in general, wanting to improve, just make sure you go check that out. Ryan, if anybody wanted to go check out the camp, where could they do that at?
They can just my social media has it all over it. I mean, if you go to @-18, whether it's, you know, Instagram or Twitter, I'll have it posted up there. Like I said, everyone's welcome. Lots of fun. I mean, the camps, obviously, you know, the private stuff, the kids are a little bit older, but the camps, 6 to 12, got a bunch of Huskies players coaching. So don't hold that against me if you're out there and you're not a Huskies fan. But it's a lot of fun. So looking forward to it.
All right. Well, awesome stuff as always, Ryan. Thank you for jumping on with us.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
All right, DJ, let's hit that NFL primetime music because we're getting to NFL headlines. All right, Graz, I teased earlier about Tom Brady and his quote that he had. What was it? I think you're going to like it. Tom Brady was asked about the Week 4 matchup between the Buccaneers and the Patriots, and he said, it's like when your high school friends meet your college friends. What do you make of that, Graz?
I think guys will use it try to use it for bulletin board stuff, but I don't think he meant it that way. It just it's a funny line. It's maybe a little veiled shot if he's calling the Patriots, who he won 6 Super Bowl with, his high school friends, and his current guys his college friends. But there will be a lot of attention, to say the very least, for that matchup when Brady goes up against his old team. A lot of attention paid to it.
A lot of attention. And, Granz, I have to ask you, you know, Tom Brady has been excellent with social media and excellent in that aspect the last part of his career. Has Tom become more likable? Because I am more of a Tom Brady fan than I ever was. I couldn't stand Tom Brady for the longest time, and now
I just can't help myself.
What was it about him? I think it more was it had to do with the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Spygate and all of those things, more so than anything else other than just Tom Brady. But I do think social media has brought out the just a snapshot of what his true personality is. He's witty, he's fun, you know, and you can see why he's a relatable guy in the locker room.
Well, I mean, I grew up in Ohio, so I'm an Ohio State guy. So, you know, by that, I hate him because he's a Michigan guy to begin with. But I've always liked him. And I've never found that other stuff to wear on him. I think he's unbelievably smooth at how he's doing things. So you're right; he's very good on social media. I mean, this is a guy who's it defies belief what he did this year, man. It defies belief to change teams. Had to be with one team for 20 years, then have, you know, really no practice with them at all because of COVID, and go through that season learning your team, learning why they're good. You see them take lumps on the job, you know, obviously not having the offense figured out in the first 4 or 5 weeks to where they got to by the end of the season, and then to win it all. Just, I think, one of the most remarkable accomplishments. I thought he wore it well, and I think he does wear it well. So I've always kind of liked Brady.
Yeah, well, going from one superstar quarterback to another, one situation not as good at the current moment. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur shows his desire for wanting Aaron Rodgers to return, and doing it in a very desperate way here, Graz, very obvious way. Quote, he said, "We want him back in the worst way," referring to Aaron Rodgers. "I know he knows that, and we'll continue to work at it each and every day." I mean, Graz, the Packers, I mean, in terms of the conversations, the things that they're saying publicly, I mean, they're making it very clear that they want Aaron Rodgers and they want him to stay here. Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem to be buying it or doesn't seem to care. What do you make of the way that Aaron Rodgers has been handling this situation?
Well, Jake, it's interesting that we saw a situation like this here, didn't we, with your pal Russell Wilson. And what was the difference between those two scenarios? Well, Russell said a few things, and what did the Seahawks say? Nothing.
Nothing.
They said nothing. They didn't speak. That John Schneider and Pete Carroll did not speak until the draft happened. That was the way that they handled it. Anything else they handled behind closed doors, they didn't handle it, any of it out in public. I think it's a mistake when you do that, when you handle things out in public. I mean, you're trying to show your fans you did your best when you lose a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. They don't care why you lost him. They're not gonna blame him in the end of the day. So I think it reeks of desperation to try and be wooing Rodgers in the media like this. Just reeks of desperation. And just a reminder of how, when the Seahawks were in that circumstance, how right they handled it, and I think and how wrong Green Bay is handling it.
Now, Groz, do you believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Green Bay Packer to start the season?
Unless he's ready to retire and do Jeopardy, I think he probably will be. I mean, they don't seem that they don't want to trade him. They don't have to. We know that the teams have the power in the leagues, although, you know, some guys are challenging that to a degree. I think Aaron Rodgers wants to keep playing, and I think he'll be wearing a Packer uniform when the year starts. Yes, I do.
I agree with you. I just think there's too much going on for them to be able to actually pull off a trade. And Aaron Rodgers already has kind of backtracked a little bit through other sources from former teammates that he has had, you know, saying, hey, no, I talked to Aaron. I think it's fixable. I think this and that. Once you get to that road of starting off as Aaron Rodgers is not, it doesn't matter what they do. He is upset. He's angry. He wants to move on. He's done with the Packers. Then when you kind of hear some of that backtracking, I'm with you. I think that he does start for the Green Bay Packers this season. After that, no guarantees there.
You know, Jake, it's one thing. We saw it here in Seattle. A week after Wally Walker signed Jim McElvain, they interviewed Sean Kemp on NBC. I'll never forget it, on a game in the finals the week later. And he looked in the camera and said, I will never wear that uniform again. And you knew that, geez, he means this. I mean, he's gone. You've not had a Sean Kemp moment from Aaron Rodgers. You've not had him looking into the camera saying, I'll never wear that uniform again.
Groz, I got to ask you a follow-up question to that coming up next in the break. But yeah. Coming up next, we are going to look at the reaction that we saw from Twitter, the overreaction of Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert's performance, and we're going to put that into perspective because I think it calls for it. So that's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Groz, we had a big monumental moment yesterday where the Mariners called up their top prospects in Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert. It was electric. It was fun. There was so much energy at T-Mobile Park. If any of you were watching at home on Root Sports, I was glued to the TV. I was excited to see how these young players performed. And look, it wasn't the storybook debut that we were all hoping for. You know, Jared Kelnick goes 0-for-4, makes contact on the ball, 3 out of 4 at-bats. Strikeouts at one of those at bats. Logan Gilbert gives up 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 home runs. So it wasn't necessarily the storybook debut, but that's not why this was such an exciting start, Groz. Right? We had Dave Sims on earlier with us, a fantastic interview in our 12 o'clock hour. If you missed it, go to 710sports.com, download the podcast. You can get it on the 710 Sports app as well. But, Dave Sims, I wrote this down, Groz. He said in his entire sporting career, and he's seen a lot of special moments, this was a top 3, top 5 moment in terms of the buildup, the energy, what it meant to a particular team or a particular moment. I mean, that's saying something. Why was it that big?
It's a twofold. It was two players. B, it wasn't the start of the year, it was about a month into the year. And C, it's two top 10 prospects that you believe are going to be linchpins in your plans for the future. Now, Dave may look back on it 5 years ago, 5 years from now, and say, well, that wasn't the case. It didn't turn out to be what I thought it would be, but it winds up looking like you can remember where you were when Felix Hernandez pitched for the first time because of what Felix Hernandez became. It wouldn't have been as memorable if he didn't have the career that he had. So, you know, the thing that makes this memorable is these are two guys who look like they have the potential to be big-time players. And to have them debut on the same day will kind of lock them together in people's minds for a while. And if they both pan out the way they hope they do, the way the Mariners hope they do, and become big-time players, this day will go down as a red-letter day in Mariner history. It has that potential, but right now that's all it is potential. It has to be accomplished on the field of play over the next couple of years, not the next couple of games, the next couple of years to determine
yes.
it. And there'll be other guys that'll be added in, you know, during that time as well. So it felt like the dawn of a change from the Mariner organization, from kind of just bringing up stopgaps and saying our guys aren't quite ready yet. To now you've got those two guys up. You'll have other guys coming up. Cal Raleigh's the name mentioned the most, who will probably be the next guy up, and there'll be others. You're putting in place anyway the building blocks of what you believe is going to be your successful team moving forward.
And I think one of the things that you said that was so key is over the next years, over the next season to seasons, not based off of what we saw last night. This last night was not special because of the expectation of the performance that these two young guys would have day one, right? That's the hope. You would love to see that be the case, but that's not the expectation. The expectation is to see these guys develop, to see these guys grow. And it's what it signifies as well is the mark that the Mariners, Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais, that organization saying, we believe as an organization that we're close to consistently winning games and turning this organization from a bottom tier club into a legitimate contender. You don't start the clock on Kelnick and Gilbert if you don't believe that to your core. And that, to me, is also the exciting part of this, Graz, is that they do feel like they're there, although, you know, sometimes when we watch this lineup hit, their batting average just being right around 200, it might not feel that way, but that's where they feel like they're at in terms of the foundation being, you know, set and laid, and it being the time for these two guys to be up with this club.
To be part of it with J.P. Crawford, who won a gold glove last year, with White, who won a gold glove, who you're looking, you know, for his bat to turn around. And remember, you got the rookie of the year out there in center field, Kyle Lewis, who is just rounding back into form a little bit after being injured and missing most of training camp. So, you know, he's going to be fine. He's already proven it at this level. You now got, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 pieces that you believe are part of your winning organization, your winning team, which is coming in the next year or two. But yeah, it's impossible to tell people nowadays to be patient. It's impossible to feel patient. I especially if you're a Mariner fan, it's 20 years, Jake. Mm-hmm. It's been 20 years since you've been in the postseason. Everyone knows it's the longest streak in pro sports, and it's got to end. It's got to end, and
yes.
you're now showing signs of it ending. We're not putting the guys into place that we believe are going to put an end to that streak. And I said to you earlier, you know, I think that you really got to see it, but before this year is over. I'm not saying that they got to win 100 games this year. Not that it wouldn't be nice, but I want to see. Mm-hmm. I want to have my aha moment with all these guys before next year comes around and say, well, I see why they like them. I see what they liked in him. I see why they like him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got enough pieces now for them to be having an impact, I think.
Well, I think that aha moment is so important, Graz, and I think it's legit. It's not just a selfish desire to have. It's an important desire to see that. And the reason for that being is this organization said, John Stanton has said, Jerry DePoto has said and promised that when they feel like they are ready to turn the corner, that they will go out and spend money. That this organization is not afraid to spend money when they feel like it is time. And as you said with the players, I also feel that way with the organization going and doing that. Go and spend money. Go and spend it the right way. Go and go after that top-tier talent at wherever you feel like this roster needs to be rounded out to be able to make that happen, whether it's shortstop, whether it's the starting pitching, wherever the needs are, that you're willing to go full bore into that. And you're not going to see that happen unless you see that aha moment not just for you, Groz, but also the for Jerry DePoto, for Scott Servais, for John Stanton in that organization. And that's a really key part of this turnaround or also what it signifies with Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert being up. But I do have to say, Groz, that when it comes to the fan base with the Mariners, it reminds me a lot of whenever you see Russell Wilson have a bad game, that you have a group of texters that come out in spades and they say, oh, see, Russell Wilson's too short. He can't play the game anymore.
Right?
There's a group of Mariners fans. Yes, they do. And there's a group of Mariners fans that, because of the misery that they've gone through, they almost relish these types of moments. Not a big contingency. I want to be very clear about that. But there is a contingency out there that sees that performance last night and goes, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, there is. And it's because, unfortunately, they've seen this stuff happen before and not work. And until it's successful, they will be out there and they will remain out there. But, you know, those of us who remember not that long ago, although it was 20 years ago, so I guess it was that long ago. I mean, there was a time, Jake, and you can probably remember it, when baseball was the king of this town. The Mariners were the king of this town. There were a couple of years where they sold out Safeco Field every game, 40,000 plus. So you know, it was absolutely electric, and it was the Kingdom. Actually, the last 2 years of the Kingdom were fantastic, for that matter. So I mean, this has been a baseball town. It has been a very good baseball town, and until people get it back, they're going to have trouble believing. And I can't blame them, because they've been led down the path a whole lot, and there's been nothing there at the end. This time, it does feel different, because it's building with young players that are highly thought of throughout baseball, but nothing's going to replace winning. It's just potential until you win games.
Well, Groz, if you, the people, have questions, we've got the answers. Get your questions in now for what I need to know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything, whatever it is, text it in now to 710-710, and we'll answer that coming up next. What I need to know.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, what I need to know, you send in the questions, we will answer them. Mariners, Seahawks, anything sports related or not, any food, any questions you have, we will answer them. Now, going to the 253 here, Groz, this is a really good question. Greater first-time championship, the Mariners or the Seahawks?
We can only guess for the Mariners, right?
I mean, at this point, To our experience, to our experience, we've had the Seahawks, but do you think the Mariners winning a championship will be greater than the emotions and everything you felt with the Seahawks winning their first Super Bowl?
I'm going to say that you're talking about it being, at this point, it's 45 years, maybe 50 years, and you actually win the World Series. I think the party will be as good, it will be as crazy as it was for the Seahawks.
Okay, I like that.
What do you think?
It's, to me, I think that, look, the Seahawks, it was special. You could feel it coming. You could feel the energy. It was a whole different era of Seahawks football after, you know, going through so much as an organization. But I just feel like with the Mariners, their drought, everything that they've gone through, I think that moment is going to be even bigger. I mean, winning an NFL, winning a Super Bowl is huge. It is huge. It was bananas. The personalities you had with the Seahawks, I mean, it was it was incredible. I mean, Groz, you were at the time, you were doing this every single day. You knew what was going on and the energy that was here in this town. But you mentioned before that the Mariners have been a baseball town before, and I remember that. And I remember Safeco Field and now T-Mobile Park. I remember the Kingdom just being absolutely wild and how fun that was. And I think if the Mariners can ever get back to that, and if they could win a World Series, I think it is going to be absolutely special. Absolutely special. So I'm going to go with the Mariners. Okay, Groz. Next question here. Groz, how much longer does the hitting coach for the Mariners get to go without being on the hot seat? It's a question I saw a lot today.
We're always quick to just fire through those guys and figuring that they're the cause of the problem and getting rid of them makes it easy solution. I don't think it's the hitting coach's doing at this point. I mean, when you're at the major league level, you're supposed to be able to hit. So you're not teaching guys to hit, just like you're not teaching guys to throw passes when you get to the NFL. Guys know how to throw the ball. At this level, guys know how to play. So if you need a scapegoat, sometimes you'll go with the hitting coach. If you don't think that guys are communicating with him well, we saw that happen with Andy Van Slyke when he was here. If you get problems like that where guys aren't communicating with the coach, then you've got an issue. But if they're listening and just young guys struggling on the way up, I don't think it's going to be of immediate concern. So I'm not being that close to the situation, since no one is that close to the situation. We're not allowed around the ballpark much anymore. I would say that it's not going to happen soon.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Groz. I would be very surprised if that was the case. You've seen the whole rest of the league, their batting average go down tremendously. I mean, it's such a different game now, Groz. I mean, you look at the 90s, you look at the 80s, and the average batting average of Major League Baseball, I mean, significantly higher than what it is today. Significantly higher.
Well, the game is just so different, Jake. It's all about,
yeah,
it's all about striking out now and hitting home runs. I mean, I went back, was talking with, I think when I was on with Stelton 2 weeks ago, and looked at Wade Boggs, just a random Wade Boggs season, where he had 740 plate appearances and struck out 39 times. You've probably already got guys who've struck out 39 times this year.
Right. It's crazy.
So,
Absolutely crazy.
The game has changed completely. So you don't look at low batting average the way you used to. And most guys don't look at batting average. You look at OPS and you look at other things about it. It's a conversation for another day, but I think that it's kind of wrecking the game the way it's played by the numbers. But it is played by the numbers.
It is played by the numbers. You're absolutely right about that. Groz, Albert Pujols has officially cleared waivers, making him a free agent. And we've heard, well, the story's been out there, but now it's official. He's a free agent. Would you be interested at all of the Mariners bringing him in?
I don't think that he'd have much use for him here, and I don't mean that in a bad way. But you're not really at a point yet where you need the leadership of an Albert to go to the postseason yet. You're not there. I don't know that I would think that he would be a fit here, unless you're planning on having him coach with you. I would think that there are some young teams out there. San Diego is a team that immediately came to mind, although they don't have a DH, but just as a young team. The White Sox are a team that has got a lot of young talent that you think could really benefit from a guy like Albert, who wouldn't mind riding the bench for the most part, which is what he'll be doing. And no one claimed him, obviously, because they're going to make the Angels pay the rest of his contract. I think that he will find a place to land, and I think it will be with one of those teams that's a contender with a lot of young players, so he can rub off on them a little bit. And I'm sure they'd love to have him back in St. Louis. They don't really have a spot for him, but I wouldn't rule that out either, because the way we saw the story of him being forced out by the Angels was just a terrible job by the Angels. And, he wants to erase his time with them as fast as he can. He's going to the Hall of Fame with a Cardinal cap on. So even though it doesn't seem like it makes much sense on paper, I wouldn't be shocked if he wound up with the Cardinals. But I think that a spot with the young up-and-coming team is going to be good for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. It would be only fitting for him to be able to retire with the Cardinals. Groz, it has been a blast. I hope you have a great weekend. Hope everybody out there has a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the weather. Don't go anywhere, though, because you got Wyman and Bob coming up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.